Like, it's good to be here and together this morning. Can you hear me clearly? Good. Old Creek. We'll muse with Musso. Since before anyone remembers, it has been clear, shining like silver. Though the moonlight penetrates it and the wind ruffles it, no trace of either remains. Today, I would not dare to expound the secret of this dream bed, but I can tell you that the blue dragon is coiled there. Old Creek. I live by an old creek. I've lived by this old creek long enough to watch it cut into the sandstone cliffs, seen sections of those sandstone cliffs fall into the creek. I've sat in that creek with bare bottom babies and watched slightly older kids mine gold, the yellow clay in those banks. And there's a flat, hard rock at the bend that they would slide down and sort of scoot along. And bigger kids rode balloony tire innards down that creek. Old creek, older than that. There was a stagecoach stop on the other side of the creek. It's still ruined. Are there home to rattlesnakes and native plants? Old Creek. We found arrowheads by that creek. And right now, there's the most ginormous beaver dam we've ever had, just down below the barn, and huge pond that might have been skatable until today. Is it snowing in the springs yet? Not yet. My friend Lindy couldn't resist boot skating on the creek and broke her wrist, but she's okay. I once fell while, when the kids were little, by putting my skis on and skiing up and down the creek. It had a good load. It was good and solid and had a good load of snow on it. That creek, old creek. Both old and ordinary. It's not like Jean and I have been watching Anne with an E, Anne of Green Gables. And Anne arrives after a childhood of terrible abuse as an orphan. on Prince Edward Island. She'd been in Nova Scotia, and has to make everything that the local pond has to be the Silver Lake. Everything has to be most extraordinary, made extraordinary by language as a defense against her own hard past. But this is just Old Creek, not needing to be, have a fancy name or anything. Old Creek, intimate. And intimate the way, you know, the in the koan, an attendant asks his teacher, "What's under your robe?" And the teacher says, "Intimate." And the student, I think, bows and says, "I understand." "And what do you understand?" "Intimate." And the teacher says, "Intimate, intimate." This poem feels, has that kind of intimacy in it, I think. And I hear, you know, when we're in work in the room and in these conversations, is it a poem? Is it a koan? It sort of gets called a poan, you know, and there's something really lovely about that too, because our koans are so many, our conversations. And this poem is both an internal conversation, I think, amusing, and a conversation with me, with you, with us. Intimate conversation. So this is in the domain of our actual lives, not some mythical special place. What place is actually most old to you, most intimately familiar? Oddly, maybe not oddly at all, it seems like, you know, once we emerge into air and space, the place we first get to know is a body. And you're going to watch infants getting to know their own bodies, mouth, fingers and toes, what to do with a digestive system. It's quite a task in the beginning. And Old Creek, our most familiar. And of course, we are creeks. You know, we are really just a water conduit. And that's always flowing, you know. We are always flowing internally. Water is moving through us at all times. Intimate. Since before anyone remembers. Reminded me also of that infancy, we tend not to consciously remember that time. Something in us remembers, but I love how it remembers. It's not has remembered or did remember or wrote down or represented, although I loved the walk back through human history. There's that. And there's also just before any living person remembers your own history. Since before anyone remembers, present tense, now we are. Anyone you know, before my brothers and sisters remember, before my best friend remembers. What is there before you remember? There we're in the territory of shared experience. And that newborn wonder of like tossing a ball on a swiftly flowing current is before we remember. And yet it's part of our shared experience as well. Because it's still us. And ever since then, it has been clear, shining like silver. So many creeks in our lives. The creek at Creek Bend that I was talking about, and the creek in Winston-Salem where I was a little girl would overflow its banks whenever there was a really good basher of a storm. And my little brother and I would kneel on the couch looking out that back window and watch the creek take over the woods behind and sort of fill the woods with water. Your creeks. And for me, Chalk Creek is another one that has special, has the vividness of the experience of lying on a rock, a big old rock in the middle of Chalk Creek. And not needing to get any closer than that because that creek already completely had taken me over. It completely was me. I completely am it. Shining. Clear. And it seems to me that the bliss of those moments to me it feels as if that bliss is the bliss of our awakening. It is the moment. Sorry, I don't have the ability to turn off the phone here. It's the bliss of recognition. This, yes, this is how it is, intimate, clear and shining. Even while I sit in the bedroom of my brother who died a year ago, clear and shining, even in the times where we are, even in the losses, maybe especially in the losses and the deep unknowns, uncertainties of our lives, this clear it is clear. It has been clear, shining like silver. And that connection, it only takes a dribble of a creek, or even walking by fresh pond where the waves were lapping when I walked the other day. Just to be there by the little waves lapping on the pond, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm water too. This creek being nameless, even more intimate, just old creek, not needing a name. Mine, yours, both clear and shining. And that clear and shining quality immediately calls up mirror, and the mirror that Tenney brought in, Huaneng's mirror that needs no stand, that needs no polishing, no place for dust to land. And that brought up for me that the poem of one of the nuns who sat with the great mirror at Enkakuji, who wrote in the night, heart clouded, heart unclouded. Just my heart. That's not exactly her words, but the feel of it. That mirror. Clear that way. Always. Since before anyone remembers. And I love that, the uncertainty of since before anyone remembers, because it's not pinning down a date. It's not saying, you know, even before the empty kalpa, although you could say that. It's just, you know, before us humans alive right now, remember, since that long, it's always been shining, always clear. And there's this sense of nothing false. It's moving too fast to settle on anything and make a truth out of it. And that experience of lying next to or in the creek, you know, its fast movement is both a kind of stillness and a kind of constant purification, washing away whatever idea I might have about it, including clear and shining for that matter. Not a thing, and yet. I loved when Tenney said last night, the formless form comes into form, but barely, or something like that. And there's that sense of constantly coming into form, but not staying there. And so like our minds in meditation, constantly the formless form comes into form, but barely. Moonlight penetrates, yes, yes, as we're sitting all the way through and through. Wind ruffles, yes, violently sometimes. You can sit and in one period you can experience a whole storm from the first riffle on the water, the first few drops making their little rings through the time when the water is just pouring from the sky, pouring through your heart and all the way back to single drips and still water again. No trace remains of moonlight. No trace remains of wind. And yet, now includes all of that. That's its own mystery, isn't it? from a distance. A thing looks still, close up, always movement. It moved. And I can, it's all action and yet seems like a thing. How can this be? And isn't that also my life? All movement, all change, and yet it seems like a thing. I seem like a thing. I thing and then I unthing again. So I feel my kinship with this. I'm kin with this old creek. And then the thing about, you know, when you do sit or lie next to a creek that's really, really rushing, almost any creek, but especially if it's moving well enough, standing waves, right? That wave behind, that's always there behind the rock. A standing wave, isn't it a funny, I love the expression because of course it's not a thing. But we could call it Harold. Am I a standing wave? Or a dream? A dream in which formlessness takes form just barely. Like us. And so now our friend Musso says, today, so here we are, forget about for as long as today, I wouldn't dare to expound the secret of this dream bed. But get ready, he's about to do it. As if expounding had to be long as this talk. Today I wouldn't dare to expound the secret of the stream bed. Which calls up the quality of vow somehow, you know, on our rakusus, on many of us, many of our rakusus, it says, today. Today. Robert King, White Mountain, takes up the bodhisattva way. Today has a kind of its own kind of gravitas, this moment, this day. What? I would tell you my dream? Would you understand it? Would I understand it? And yet the teaching of a lifetime, right? What's the teaching of a lifetime? Say something in response. And he's going to rise to that. We're asking, say something. You wouldn't dare to expound, but say something. It matters. We're connected. We need each other. Say something. And a lot of the koans do kind of say something about this secret of the stream bed. You know, one treasure, there's one treasure hidden in the body, hidden in the center of the cosmos. It picks up the lamp and carries it to the Dharma hall. So he says, I can tell you that the blue dragon is coiled there. Whoa. Can't tell you much. I'll just tell you about that blue dragon, you know, in case it interests you. Yeah. Well, it's a dragon. And what else is this amazing, unfathomable dance of presence and absence than a dragon? The essence of change, the essence of thus come. Thus coming and going. Thus, just so. And change, where is that? Where is it? At the very core, in the seat, in the bed, in the stream bed of what we are. Not to pin down the dragon, but as a for instance. The Tao Te Ching says, the valley spirit never dies. And this has so much that quality. Out of the bed, that's mysterious, that stream bed, what's under there? Well, the operating system. What is it that brings presence and absence out of that which we do not know? Reluctant to name it. And when we meditate, this is the very ordinary mystery that we get to witness. When we sit down and rest here and stop, this most ordinary mystery of being, old stream, old creek, and it contains our power and our freedom, coiled, full of potential energy, abiding nowhere, letting the heart mind come forth. Let all our truths be written on the water. This is also the essence of practice, yeah? Underneath our truths. And this dragon is located. Everything else, you know, is moving. I won't tell you the secret of the stream bed, also moving. But the blue dragon is coiled there. Way young, when I was very young, I guess, I don't know, high school or college, I wrote a horrible poem that was actually about this realization. And it had to do with, it said something like, it's so funny. It said, like, ebony transformed, translucent orb of stone with sempiternally new melting core. And it was about what I felt at the core of me, it with the stream of me rushing by. And that was what I wrote, was that this was lying somehow in the stream bed. I didn't use that word. But it's something that you know. It's something that you can feel. This something there at the core in the stream bed. The lore about dragons, especially the blue dragon, is that they're just benevolent protector. A blue dragon helped Yu, the limping god who was in Chinese mythology, the one who tamed all of the wild flooding waters so that agriculture could happen. Helped by or was a dragon, a little unclear. And then I'm going on long, but I'm only giving this one talk, so bear with me. So bringing in just for a moment, so the blue dragon's protective and benevolent, and yet, yeah, dragons, so full of power, the blue in the bottom of the water, the blue of water, the blue of sky, a cloud dragon that appears from within and behind the clouds. Our beloved. Our beloved bright solitude in the temple of the cloud dragon. That's her whole name. So a thing that John Terence says about dragons, from the vastness of galaxies to the particles inside the atom, it's all dragon. And so I got onto it. I took a meander looking at the color blue. There isn't a pigment. It's extremely vanishingly rare pigment for actual blue. And so it's not too surprising that many languages don't have a word. But here's one being. If I can get my computer to let me see my tabs. And if I could be, I don't know if I'm a co-host, I'd like to share something if I can. Might be able to do this. I'll have to, share this first because I needed the this tab. This butterfly actually has extremely rare thing, blue pigment. And it's called a olive wing. An olive wing butterfly that happens to actually have blue pigment. Lovely. But otherwise, the blue of flowers comes from red pigment mixed with others, and blue actually on the spectrum comes between violet and green, very short span, 450 to 495 nanometers on the visual light spectrum. And for other blues, it's how light passes through, like a blue jay's feathers or a peacock's feathers. The blue is it happens in our minds, but it's the refraction that happens as light gets scattered through those wings. And Egyptians coined the word for blue 4,500 years ago. No other language had it at the time, and they made it. They mixed things to make it for funeral objects. And in ancient languages, somebody has determined the order in which colors appeared: black and white, red, green, yellow, and then much later, blue. So if you can't perceive it, does that color exist? Blue reveals itself when water absorbs the longer wavelengths. And so we see blue sky, we see blue water. And this is one reason that faraway objects appear bluer, like the blue mountains that are referenced in so many of our favorite Chinese and Japanese poems. Blue is nowhere in nature, someone said. It's only an imagination. How about that only? I think I would rather say it appears to our imagination. And so perfect that this dragon is the blue dragon. the dragon of dream, the dragon of our imaginations, the dragon that makes everything happen, the dragon of our awakening, the dragon of our usefulness in the world, the dragon of our wu-wei. Like a stream that doesn't have to accomplish anything. The old creek is just the old creek, powerful in its indolence. Your intimate, the dragon. Is it you or is it other? Are you in it? Is it in you? What is the yin-yang of our relationship with our dragons? Does it have a gender? It's like Linji's, this lone brightness here before me. And the true person of no rank, always coming and going through the meat of your face. Could the blue dragon be both coiled in the creek bed and also in the way of dreams, peeking out from clouds in my sky? Or in fact, could it be the sky entire? Oh, dragon. Could it be that I am in you as you are in me? Streamness, streambedness, simply being the full measure of being alive.